My favorite theme song, Money, from Pink Floyd. So welcome, everybody. My name is Laura Tan. You are watching the show Your Money and Your Mindset. So hello to our syndication partners, Stickum, Blog TV, Real Coaching Radio TV Network, Receiver Internet Radio, Radio Roku, Shoutcast. You people there with your smartphones. New Media Radio and TV as our syndication channels. Thank you once again for tuning in for another week of very interesting talk and information. And if you act on it, you're going to get very rich. Trust me. Okay, so the show is called Your Money and Your Mindset. And you know I get interesting guests on to talk about their experiences making money or getting on their journey to making money. And so today is no exception. But you see, it's not just about the money, it's about having good health, great relationships, and while you're enjoying your cash. Now, you'll agree that when you're passionate about something that you do, you're going to do it a lot better. And it's even better when you're doing it and people pay you lots of money to do it. So if you think that you're stuck in a place where it's not really floating your boat, don't worry, because there are ways and means of getting out of it. And I've brought on a guest to talk specifically about that because it's been her journey, okay? And she is a living, breathing proof that you can do it. If you start from a point that's not where you want to be now, nothing is lost. Everything is an experience that will help you. So my guest today is Ms. Shivani Gupta, the CEO of Passionate People Institute. She's an executive coach, a mentor to small business owners, and also a highly sought-after corporate speaker, so she knows how to say her thing. Now, the thing is that Shivani qualified as an electronic and electrical engineer, okay? Then she went on to do an MBA before taking on a senior management role with BHP Billiton, not to be confused there, the mob, okay? BHP is Broken Hill Proprietaries. So what's happened then is that Shivani then followed her passion, left the corporate world, to start her own business. And her instincts were right because it's paid off, because she was recognized when she won the Telstra Young Businesswoman of the Year. Now that's a highly prestigious national award in Australia. So this is a corporate warrior turned business butterfly. And she's also a wife and a mother of four kids. Maybe you should talk to her about the birds and the bees. Now, seriously folks, who says you can't have it all? So wife, mother, career, money, happiness, the works. So welcome, Shivani. How are you going?
I'm great. It's fantastic to be on the show.
Excellent. So now we know that Shivani was an electronic and electrical engineer, but who is Shivani Gupta? Tell us.
Well, I think it depends on which area you look at. So if I maybe divide that up into my personal life and my professional life, and the way you've just talked a fair bit about, you know, my professional life, I guess when we're 17 or 18, it's very hard for us to know exactly what we love and exactly what we're passionate about. So I went down that path of following people that I was inspired by at the time. And the people that really inspired me were people like my father, who was an engineer, so I followed his footsteps and became an engineer. And we used to often have debates in the house whether electrical or mechanical engineers were better ones. And I think, like, what we talk a lot about, that typical Generation Y these days, that we all want to get there by 25, we all want to be running the company at 25, and we want to move out of the way these people that have been in those businesses. So I was that typical Gen Y, and from a professional perspective, just wanted to run a big company, and then went down that path of studying and doing that. I guess when you start to that interweave that into my personal life, having been grown up in an Indian family, and I guess people that have parents that come from a highly educated background or an ethnic background whose values are very much around education, growing up in India and then moving to Australia at the age of 11, it was so much about, look, Shivani, we're not going to leave you a pot of wealth. So there was a whole heap of money beliefs that we'll get into later around my family. But a lot of it was around get the right education, get that in. And so I went down that path of trying to please my family and wanting them to feel successful for moving to Australia. And it was only when I got to this really senior job, I thought I'd get there by 25. I got there at 27, which is still very early to get into a pretty big global role. I realized that I just wasn't very content. I really wasn't very happy. And I started questioning myself of why I felt so disconnected to so many different things. Disconnected in my relationship at that time. I was in a long-term relationship. You know, disconnected around my health. I did a lot of travel and I put on a lot of weight. And I just felt really disconnected to myself. And often when that happens for me, my journey really started, I always say, 10 years ago when I went trekking in the Himalayas and Nepal and finally, for the first time in my life, took some time out for myself. And something funny happens when you take time out for yourself and you start reflecting on your life. You realize that you need to make some changes and you can't just think about them. You've got to take some action. And on that trip, I decided that I would let my long-term relationship go and I would also let this very secure, very high-paying job, which was my dream for the last 10 years, go so that I could explore something I deeply cared about.
Wow. That takes guts, really takes guts to say, I'm not happy where I am. I feel the sense of disconnection, or, you know, I'm disconnected from who I really am. Even though at that stage you probably wouldn't put it in those words, you just probably sense some restlessness, was it?
Absolutely. And so many people that we now come across, you know, in our business do that. We know things, you know, and statistics through things like the Harris Interactive study that over 80% of people are dispassionate about their work. Over 80%. And so when you look at that statistic, that is scary. That means that so many of us feel restless around our work, and that's just around our work, let alone we start to look at areas that this program's about around, you know, where you feel connected to your spirituality, your relationships, your health, and feeling that balance. And so many of us are feeling that. It's really about taking some of that time out and working out what you need to do. And so for me, that time of a month away was crucial from the pace that I was going so hard in the corporate world of working 80 or 90 hour weeks and really not putting myself first. And yes, it takes guts, but it's also one of the most scariest things I've ever done. You know, it wasn't, I've got to do this and this is so easy. I remember talking to a number of friends and family and some of them were like, are you mad? You know, people dream of what you've got. Are you absolutely mad? And I remember saying, probably. I probably am a little bit mad. But if I don't give this a go, then I may regret it. And I don't want to live a life full of regret.
Yeah, precisely. You sound like somebody who's basically experienced a midlife crisis when they were 27.
Yeah, and I think I continue to have them. I think that, you know, in our life, we are allowed to have a number of crises. Crises is fantastic because what crises does is it gets us into a situation that says, this isn't working, I'm not very happy about this, and now I've got to be forced myself and look at the decisions and options I have, and maybe I need to start choosing in favour of the things I love, choosing the things that I'm passionate about, and make those decisions. And Louie, one of the things that I say constantly, I did this very rough number once, that approximately we've got about 4,000 weeks in a life. And when I did this summary, and I know this was my engineering, and I was trying to work out how to inspire people, I went, that's not very much. You know, so that's an approximate number of 80 years, which is around our life expectancy at this point, and around 50 weeks a year, and I know I've rounded them off. And that's from the time that we're born. And so if we're 40 or 45, we've got like less than 2,000 weeks left. And I just think it's so important that when you look at it in those terms, you start to go, let me get into a crisis and then I want to shift the way that I do things, whether it's around my health or around the way that I look at money or around my career, because, you know, you've heard that saying that life is short, but it really is when you actually start to count down how many weeks you literally might have left.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, what you're saying, I'm hearing a lot of passion coming through and being true to yourself. But again, coming from a family that's very, in a sense, culturally steeped in filial piety, basically, you know, obeying your parents, making sure that you don't rock the boat. How did you overcome that bit and say to your folks, look, I'm leaving my high-flying corporate job and I'm just going to do what I want to do? Were they, you know, a bit concerned about that?
A bit concerned would be putting it lightly. Mind you, they were also very concerned when I decided that I'd fallen in love with a guy who had two children from a previous marriage. And the thing is that whether it's our parents, whether it's our bosses, whether it's our friends, whether it's our children, you know, people are passionate about different things. My mum, for example, was very passionate about getting me married to an Indian person. And so from the day that I was born, she had started to put a dowry together. This is a true story. She had started to put a dowry together because she wanted my wedding to be the best wedding on the planet, particularly, you know, better than any couple, particularly than any neighbour on the street. And so when we moved to Australia, her expectation was that I would still continue to live her passion, which was to go through a process of an arranged marriage and do that. And I remember she said to me, she said, look, Shivani, you know, Bete, which means child. She said, Bete, I never had that chance to marry who I wanted. My father chose your dad and I got married. With you, I want you to have the choice. And here are three people you can choose from. I have gone through the process of shortlisting them and you decide that. And I remember being disgusted, flabbergasted, thinking, is my mother for real? But after bringing me to Australia at the age of 11, that she expects me to marry somebody she chooses? And the answer was absolutely yes. And the answer was because they're so into education and having a stable job, and as much as I love my parents, they are into the job and not the entrepreneur model. And I learnt very early on that really, if you're going to create wealth, if you're going to create the life you want, I needed to have that freedom to be able to look at my time and what I did and do things differently. And I knew that I needed to go down that entrepreneur path. But no, they weren't very supportive of that. They were very loving. They've always loved me through the decisions I've made. But certainly, I'm sure that there'd be times when I would have left their house, they would have gone, I don't know what she's doing, you know, she seems to be having a midlife crisis. And I know that a number of my friends said the same thing. But people will constantly judge us for decisions we make. And at the end of the day, it's your life. And in this case, it's my life. And I need to, you know, make the decisions that are right for me. They don't always work out. So I'm not in any form attached to the fact that every decision I make is going to work out perfectly. But they're my decisions. And I'm fairly strong-headed to be able to then stick to what I think is right for me.
Well, congratulations to you for sticking to your guns because, okay, this is a live interactive show, people. So you're out there, you're listening to this person or woman who's basically said, I'm following my instincts, my heart, above and beyond, well, the culture I've been brought up in. And to go against the grain, like I said, takes a lot of courage. So this is an interactive show. If people out there have... If this resonates with you, please do type in your questions or into the chat room. So welcome again, Stick and Blog TV, Real Coaching Radio, TV Network, Receiver, Internet Radio, Radio Roku, Shoutcast. You guys with the smartphones, you can dial in New Media Radio and TV. So I'm finding this fascinating, Shivani, because as you're talking, from this point of view, it sounds that you have trod that path. You've taken the chances, like you say, some of them haven't worked out, and you're not too fussed about it. So where is that sense of yourself come from that has allowed you to take those steps, which are, as I see it, extremely courageous steps? Because one of the things is when you leave your high-flying corporate job, you know that you're not going to get paid the same salary while you're going into whatever it is that you're starting up. So how did you come to terms with that emotionally about saying that you're going to drop income? And it's going to be fairly drastic.
Well, it depends on what your passions really are. If your passion, you know, is money, then you're probably not going to go down that path. In fact, then you'll always look at that next job or that next business or that next opportunity. So you'll actually then say, well, that's the thing that I, you know, I'm most passionate about. And I have clients and I've worked with people and I have friends and family that fit into that. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic. If you're passionate about money, then you need to be wealth oriented. I guess a great little model that may come in handy for some of the listeners on the show is, you know, that's been around for a long time, since the 1950s, called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. And essentially what the model talks about is that when we have our basic needs met, when we've met food, we've met shelter, safety, belonging, our socialness, our work, we then look for something bigger. And that doesn't mean that at lunchtime I'm not right down on my Maslow's hierarchy because I'm starving and I now need to get some lunch. But what happens in our life is when we see people who are older, who are more experienced, people who've generated a lot of wealth, who start to question what they're really going to now do. I guess because I achieved success at a much earlier age, I guess I just started questioning that earlier. And my guidance to the listeners would be, you know, kind of don't wait till you're in your 50s or 60s. I mean, it's never too late, but don't wait until I have that, then I'll go and do something. And the other thing, Louise, is that you've got to look at the alternative. The alternative to staying in a really poor relationship that was not very supportive of me and where I didn't feel, you know, that it was a 7 or 8 out of 10 relationship. Relationships can't stay at a 10 out of 10 all the time. But if they're, you know, 2 out of 10 or 3 out of 10 a lot of the time, then you've got to make some decisions about what will happen if I stay, because that's a day-in, day-out thing. So I got more excited, more passionate about the alternative, because what I looked at is that the other alternative was not great, and that is not how I wanted to actually, you know, live. And Wayne Dyer, who's a beautiful spiritual teacher around the world, talks about that, and he tells a story about the fact that you don't want to get to your deathbed and die with your music in view. You actually want to live a passionate life. So, you know, if you're not living the areas that you're not really quite happy with, or you're really not, you know, that they're not at that area that you want, then you actually want to do some things around that. And it's more than goal setting. It's really identifying your passions and then doing some work on them to work out how you're going to realize them.
Okay, I'm going to put a hypothetical to you. But before that, your tagline says inspire, challenge, transform. You know, these are, you know, big words, and it will get some people excited, it will get some people a bit frightened. So what if you have a client coming to you saying, I am not really happy with my life, I want to pursue something else I'm passionate about, however, I still want to have the same on par income. How can you help them?
Well, before we even get into the income part of it, the first question I always ask is a readiness question. It's to say that, are you actually ready to do a transformation? Are you ready to go on a journey? And if the answer is no, that is completely okay. They don't all have to say yes. But if they don't say yes, then they need to understand that that is the people we don't take on. We don't want to take people on who are not ready, and there's no judgment about that. There's no questioning about that. It's just, it's just us. The other two words that you talked about, part of transformation comes from challenge. You really want to be able to challenge people's thinking, their behaviour, and what they do that. So if you're applying that to yourself, you know, you probably do certain things a certain way. People have told you that you really annoy them when you do that. People have told you that they don't like your behaviour about that, but you're kind of not listening. And so you need to be challenged around that. And, when we do our work, it's not just sitting there having a nice chat, that you really want to be challenged in some of that work. And the inspiration comes when you actually have an aha moment in a conversation, or when you're reading that. And I'm sure, you know, you've had that, Laura. I've had that. Sometimes I get that from books, or when I'm in a seminar, or, you know, when I go in and do some of my own coaching and do some of my own inner work, that I have those aha moments. And those aha moments are the ones that really inspire us to make a shift. So that's what I kind of, what we talk about, that we don't just want to inspire, because you can inspire somebody, get somebody up really high and really excited about something, and you know what? Then it doesn't go anywhere. It's kind of that hoo-hoo, ha-ha you get from coming to a seminar. You're all elated and excited at the end of a seminar. 3 days later, you're flat. You have no support mechanisms and systems to then be able to realize that. So inspiration and inspire has to be coupled with challenge. And then it has to be, you know, locked on with the end with transformations, so you actually see that shift happening. So going back to your question around when we have somebody who says, I don't want to let some of that go, but I want that, it's really, you know, a simple technique is to actually get them to identify their musts and their wants. Because people want A, but they also want B, and then they want C. We can't marry 5 people. Well, some of us can, but, you know, we can't marry 5 people, and we can't have, I'll have the best of him and the best of, you know, that a characteristic, and then jumble them up in a box and get the perfect man or the perfect woman. And so, you know, life is a little bit like that. It's about making choices, it's about prioritizing, and it's about saying, well, what are your masks? What are the things that you deeply are passionate about, things that you are not willing to sacrifice for anything? And then what are the things you would love to have? What are the things that you're secondary passionate about, you would love to have? And then getting people to sort through some of those priorities in their head and then making choices.
All right. You talk about setting priorities and in a sense, you're getting inside their head. So that leads nicely, thank you, to the next question, because when you're getting people to that stage of, you know, what is it I really want? In this show, it's called Money in Your Mindset, and I'm a firm believer that our mindset actually determines our level of wealth, which also means that you will be talking to people who've got some preconceived ideas or paradigms about how money should be made, how they can only do ABC to make money, or they have what you call that, some sort of mental thermostat about how much they should earn because they think this is all they deserve. What do you have to do? Or do you, first of all, do you have to do that sort of work to uncover that within a person, like you say, the aha moments that goes, oh, maybe I can do X, Y, Z to turn my hand to this and find that this actually makes me very excited about getting out of bed. And hey, look, it actually can make me a lot of money. Do you have to do that with people first and foremost and get them to the level of saying, get out of your own head, please, and have a look at the way you're living your life at the moment and, you know, things that aren't working. What can you do to help them?
Great question, and almost all of the work is around mindset shifting, because you know, whether it's around an app, yeah, it's funny, you know, that whether it's around something that you have in your body, we know the power of the mind to, when we get that shift in our mind, we can heal our bodies, and there's a whole heap of work out there, you know, in the world that's produced every day around that. Yeah. So when we start to talk about money, there's a lot of old belief systems that we have around money, and often they come from our childhood, they come from our families, and it's not that they mean to, you know, make us scared about creating wealth. It's just that what they've experienced in their childhood or what they've experienced in their upbringing. And so for my family, you know, who moved to Australia, who moved in 4 suitcases, they had to work very hard to earn money. So one of the belief systems that I had, if I talk about myself before other people, is that money is hard to earn. You know, so when you work hard, you get money, but money doesn't just flow to you easily. And I remember when I first started doing speaking, where people were able to prepare to pay me, you know, what I felt were considerable sums of money to go and speak for 45 or 50 minutes, there was this sense, and I had to do a lot of work on myself and get some support around me, because I felt that I was being a fraud and not actually worth working all day. I was getting paid a day or 2 days' work for giving a 45 or 50-minute speech and really enjoy it. And so, you know, there's all these belief systems that we have around money, and I think it's very important that you identify what those belief systems are. And then you want to be able to say, well, what are the belief systems that I want to create? And people get very stuck because they don't know different ways of doing things. So what you want to do is kind of surround yourself with people, whether it's in the form of books or seminars, or whether it's something like listening to this great, you know, show where you have other speakers and people that come on and talk about different ways of doing things. You want to learn different ways that you haven't been taught in your life to be able to, you know, come and do. And for me, you know, I really wanted to, as I talked about earlier, move from being in a job to becoming an entrepreneur. And that is quite a big shift. You can quit your job and do that, but to then make it a success is another thing. And that requires a lot of mindset work to then become an entrepreneur. You know, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that don't make money. So you can call yourself an entrepreneur, but to make, be a successful entrepreneur, you want to make a lot more money than what you did, you know, in a previous job. So if I can give you an example of somebody that, for example, that's just come into our office in the last week, they're both in a full-time job. They have a fantastic business idea, and they really want to move into from a job into becoming an entrepreneur, and they are very scared and very understandably scared. So when I actually got them to do their musts and wants and look at how much money they need to live, they believe that they need 6 to 8 months to get this venture up. So I said, well, let's be conservative and call it 12 months. And we looked at how much money that they had in their bank for their living, and whether they had enough so they wouldn't be stressing out during that 12 months. And also that if this venture didn't work, what would be the backup position? So what's the reality? You always want to have an exit clause before you enter something. And when they looked at all of that, they've got about 3 years' worth of savings, and they are both very qualified people. And in a worst case scenario, they would be able to pick up contract jobs very easily in the areas that they're experts in from a technical perspective and do that. And once they realised that, they stopped feeling so fearful, and they realised that actually, you know what, I can take this leap, because if it works, and I believe in their case it will, because they're very dedicated, they've done a lot of research, and they're not just, you know, falling into something, they realise that they actually can take that leap. And so some of the time it's about encouraging people to look at themselves deeply and make them realise that you know, there's not a lot that can go wrong. And as Susan Jeffers, you know, calls it, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. You're always going to be fearful making a change. You know, do the work, but feel through that fear and do it anyway.
Okay, that's tremendous, because that is exactly what I want to talk about, in the sense that you provide techniques as well to get people past the fear. So first of all, people, just realize that you're going to be afraid. There's no question about it. Nobody goes through these sorts of great changes in their lives without feeling some degree of stress and some degree of trepidation and the what-if scenario. So you're talking about how do you manage that fear and still take the action that is required to get you from point A to point B, which is where you really want to be. Is that right?
Absolutely. And Louie, the thing is that our head, when we work in our head tells us a lot about making money. So if I can relate it to your money and wealth question, and that's very important. Our heads are very important in the training we've had and the skills we have to be able to do that. But passion, and I guess the expertise that I have around passion, is that's where our heart is tuned in. Mm. And so I'm not a big one saying let's all operate from the head, right? But I'm also not all for let's all operate from the heart. I think when you can get to the point where you can actually connect your head and your heart, then you become a lot more successful. What people do is they tend to do what they're good at, which is the head stuff. So they want to generate wealth in an area that they're good at, rather than they're deeply passionate about at their heart level. If you can actually really look at what you love doing, and then look at how to make that into a venture that makes money, you're going to be so much more successful long term. Because then you're actually doing something that doesn't feel like work, that doesn't feel like the head stuff. So you then go and acquire the skills, or work out to look at the skills that you have and apply it to something. So the number of times I have people saying, oh, you know, Shani, I am passionate about teaching kids how to, you know, teach them how to do football. And so I do football training with my child, which is a real life example. But I have no idea how to make money out of it. I just do that because I have this full-time job, but I'm passionate about it. And really, if you look at, you know, that as a business model, I then say, well, why don't we actually look at, and I'm not saying quit your job straight away, why don't we connect your head and your heart up? Why don't we actually work out a way so that we tap into your passions and then use your head to convert that into a business? And so, for example, this particular gentleman, who is actually, you know, a CEO of a medium-sized firm and has about 500 employees, he's now started a business on the side, which is going to be training young kids around their mindset and physical skills and eating and how to look after their bodies, particularly teenage boys, so rather than go down into the path of eating lots of junk food. Yeah. And he's going to create this business. He's already started this business on the side, and he'll bring other providers in because he's deeply passionate about it and it relates to his own life. And when we get that tipping point happening where he's able to get that business to the point where there's starting to be enough income, then we can get him transitioning out of his current role. Or work out how to run both, you know, or work, make that decision later. So I always say, go with your passion and work out how to make that into a business, and then money will flow, rather than trying to get money to flow because you're good at something, because your head tells you that you're good at something.
Right. So, yeah, this is a connection between your head and your heart. And basically that's what you found when you were trekking through Nepal, isn't it, getting that connection and having enough guts to jettison people out of all your work that wasn't really giving you that much.